divine institution of marriage on our minds, we'll now deal with Sodom and Gomorrah.
Make sure you're in fellowship as here now in verse 6. In our third example of God's overruling will, the example of Sodom and Gomorrah is brought forth. We're reading the verse again. And if he condemned the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah to destruction by reducing them to ashes, having made them an example of those who would live ungodly thereafter. Again, as with all the examples, the first-class condition remains intact and assumed, as well as God being the subject of the condemning or judging in this respect. And just pick up point one as we just get started on this first session. Peter's third example narrows the venue of God's judgment to that of a specific society. First example of his overruling will dealt with the angelic fallen angel infiltration in the antediluvian era. The second was the world mass judgment of overruling and destruction of mankind, with the exceptions of Noah and his family. And now he narrows that venue down to simply a succinct society here that existed in the Middle East during this time. And the narrowing down the view here is to point to this, to ensure believers that the entire world does not have to be corrupt for God to intervene and overrule otherwise. God's overruling will is continually enforced, whether one may specifically recognize it or not. His overruling will, his judgment, his wrath keeps on being revealed against those who suppress the truth of his word and unrighteousness, as Romans says, as it keeps on being thing, is constantly there. And you don't have to have the entire world encapsulated in evil for God to intervene, even experientially, with drastic measures, as we see here in regards to Sodom and Gomorrah. So three, the example of the fall of empires, nations, and peoples throughout history are marks of God's overruling will in this vein. And we looked at these verses. The verses make very clear God's in charge of nations and people. He establishes the boundaries of nations. He determines their appointed time of existence. He raises up, he subdues, he puts down, destroys, etc. And throughout history, we see the influx of the empires, nations, etc. Throughout time, and this is God's hand being engaged in this respect. So for even regional social orders, steeped in evil, are not immune to judgment in time. A more restrictive social order, like cities or towns, as we have here in an example. And they're not immune in regards to God's judgment for an unbridled STA influx of activity in regards to their existence. So five, this as it was for a once prosperous region in the fertile valley of Jordan, again, and if he condemned the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah to destruction by reducing them to ashes. Sodom and Gomorrah, the fertile valley of Jordan here in this respect, was once a prosperous and very affluent society and region that existed. And they met therein. Six, the inhabitants of these cities serve as an epitome of example, at the top of the list, if you will, of God overruling gross immorality that characterized the region. Now, sin is sin, but obviously we all recognize some sin is worse than other sins. A murder is worse than lying to somebody. And we recognize that. We recognize that in regards to our laws, etc. You don't get the chair for perjury. You get the chair for killing somebody, if you get it at all. The only chair anymore anybody gets is the one in the trial and the chair in their cell for the rest of their life, if that happens. But anyway, I won't go off there. But here, obviously, we have an example of gross immorality. Unbridled ST activity of such filth and height of evil that God determines to intervene in this respect. So, and this is a premier example in this regard. And seven, the particular vice in view here is that of unrestrained homosexuality. People have taken issue with this of modern times in regards to homosexuality and what the Bible has to say about it, including believers, and the sin indeed that is confronted in regards to God making an example of them is indeed this vice. This vice of perversion that obviously is especially despicable before God. And we will prove our case, letting Scripture interpret Scripture in this respect. That Sodom and Gomorrah wasn't just known for, you know, vices of drinking and prostitution. No, the main vice that got them in the condition that they ultimately found themselves in was being homosexuals and the unbridled activity. And it ran rampant, if you will, in that regard. 8, their destruction has been recorded in the Scriptures as a future warning to all, having made them an example to those who would live ungodly thereafter. 9, 4, the five cities of the valley, Sodom and Gomorrah, were not the only cities destroyed. There were others within that region, but they are the ones of renown. So 4, the five cities of the valley, along with the surrounding valley, were destroyed by a supernatural judgment that involved the raining of fire and brimstone, that is sulfur, being the brimstone, out of the sky, reducing the cities to ash. The accounts of this particular example and information surrounding the area, Genesis 13, 10, and 12. And in regards to Abraham and Lot and the situation of them finally separating, quarrel engages between the two and forces a separation, which Abraham was supposed to have done before, but circumstances took care of itself in spite of his not willingness to separate earlier. And Abraham gives Lot the choice as they're in Canaan. Which direction you want to go? You go where you want to go and live your life, and I'm going my direction. You go your way, I go my way. And Lot made his choice. Verse 10, Lot lifted up his eyes and saw all the valley of the Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere. This was what was before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt, as you go to Zoar. It's very plush, very affluent. You could grow anything there, essentially. Great for economic prosperity. Confer chapter 14, verses 1 and 2 and 3. And it came about in the days of Amphrel, king of Shinar, Arioch, king of Elasar, Chedorlaomer, king of Elam, and Tidal, king of Goan, that they made war with Bera, king of Sodom, and with Bersha, king of Gomorrah, Shinab, king of Admah, and Shemeber, king of Zeboim, and the king of Bela, that is Zoar. And that lists the five cities of the region in that respect. And all these came as allies to the valley of Siddim, that is the Salt Sea, the valley of Jordan, the area, the very region that Lot chose to enter into. Also 19, 25, and 29. And four of those five cities were destroyed. And he overthrew those cities. The Lord rained on Sodom and Gomorrah. Again, his hand is the power of the force that brought this about. And all the valley. See, and all the valley. It wasn't just those two cities. It took in the valley around them. And all the inhabitants of the cities, and what grew on the ground. And then verse 29, thus it came about when God destroyed the cities of the valley, that God remembered Abraham, sent Lot out of the midst of the overthrow, when he overthrew the cities in which Lot lived. Which Lot will be our next example of God's deliverance. And then reducing the fire and brimstone, the accounts, again, Genesis 19 passage there, 24, 25, throughout there, 26, as we know in the story of Lot and his wife and his two daughters, and his wife But his wife from behind looked back, and she became a pillar of salt, part of her judgment. Now Abraham rose early in the morning and went to the place where he had stood before the Lord, and he looked down toward Sodom and Gomorrah and toward all the land of the valley. And he saw, and behold, the smoke of the land ascended like the smoke of a furnace. Their nuclear plant went haywire on them. Thus it came about when God destroyed the cities of the valley that God remembered Abraham, etc. Confer verse 30. And Lot went up from Zoar, stayed in the mountains, his two daughters, and stayed in the cave, he and his two daughters. Essentially, the place is gone. The little town he did go to, he got under fear, thinking about God's judgment, whatever. Also, Deuteronomy 34:3. Regards to the Negev and the plain in the valley of Jericho, the city of palm trees, as far as Zoar. Zoar being one of those cities. And it was the one that was spared. That's why I'm bringing that in. So, four of these five cities, the cities that I read the kings in, four of those five got destroyed. Zoar is the one that was spared. So, ten, the cities had become so morally corrupt. In the days of Abraham and Lot, that the righteousness of God called for their spectacular and total incineration by fire and brimstone. Because of the unbridled homosexual activity. Even the Bible states that, quote, the smoke of the land ascended like the smoke of a furnace, as we read it in Genesis 19:28. With respect to this event, point 12, some speculate that the cities could have been destroyed by volcanic upheaval, as they try to explain how this event might occur, and that a volcano probably caused it. But closer scrutiny said, no, that's not the case. This was a special intercession, interceding by God, and he did it through the power of his hand in a miraculous way. So, 13, but there is a vast difference between the sites of Sodom and Gomorrah and other sites destroyed by volcanic action. 14, for example, Pompeii, Italy, was destroyed in 79 AD during the time of Peter and Paul, when they were writing a little bit after their death, shortly, but by the eruption of Mount Vesuvius, where the ash smothered everything and buried the city, buried it 4 to 6 meters up to 18 feet, 20 feet, 12 to 20 feet, somewhere around there. 15, Pompeii was rediscovered in 1599. And in recent times, the structures had been dug out from under the ash, remaining in a state of remarkable preservation as if life had, was held in suspension. And you can see the pictures if you want to Google it in and research it out, and of these areas that they've dug out, and the pillars, etc., all still intact. And you can tell that's what they were, etc., their streets. And the ash, basically, if it just didn't cause something to buckle and fall, otherwise they were preserved pretty much underneath as they were. And that's not what occurs here. 16, but these ashen cities, in our verse, are totally destroyed. They turn completely to ash. So 17, nothing remains but the, quote, shadows, end quote, or shapes of what were once city walls, stone buildings, fink-shaped statues, and temples. 18, the organized pattern of the city streets is still evident. Seeing pictures of this Ron White that we mentioned in here, he got to a certain place that he was on the Dead Sea at a certain angle, looking back across the Dead Sea, and what close up looked like just, you know, ashen cliffs that was over there. You could see an exact design of man-made structures, of homes where windows were at, where doors were at, where the streets were at, but you had to be at the proper position and angle to see it. But then, yet they were all still there like they were, except they're all ash. And their shapes and designs, the shadows of these things, all still remain in this respect. 19, there is no example of the world of any natural phenomenon that displays even remotely the destroyed remains of this cities, of these cities. You can't find any other example of this ever discovered or you can appeal to. At 20, during the 1980s, Ron Wyatt, who was discovered of the correct Red Sea crossing site at the tip of Gulf of Aqaba and the real Mount Sinai in Arabia, discovered the remnants of that rain. Rain, God raining fire and brimstone. 21, below is a single picture of a ziggurat, a temple, shape on a raised platform as one example of the unique nature of this destruction. And it's a small picture, but you can kind of get the idea of it there. The shape is still basically intact, but obviously it just looks like a mound, almost a natural, wondrous natural thing that had been shaped out of the landscape. But it's one of these old buildings that was left there as they investigated and looked at it. 22, you can catch more pictures. More flicks at http://arcdiscovery.com, as I wrote it out for you, if you want to do your own research and find pictures of these things to convince yourself more. 23, what occurred here, balls of almost pure sulfur, not in a crystalline form as in a powder, as one might find sulfur, as would be expected in its natural state, but in the form of pressed power have been found. In the form of pressed power, sulfur hand grenades, incendiary hand grenades, basically is what you're looking at. That type of natural destructive power that is found in regards to the brimstone, which is sulfur. 24, this is the biblical brimstone, which is in the Hebrew is Gephareth, and in the Greek, Theon. 25, these death balls are embedded throughout the ashes. They have found them in their excavations, and they're looking through this area. 26, surrounding each one is a shell of vitrified ash. Looking at it, sort of changed to a hard kind of glass-like substance. Being glass, obviously, it's still brittle, and you can still crush it. And 27, it appears that as these burning balls of brimstone fell from the sky, they consumed literally everything. As God rained these sulfur balls down upon them with this incendiary type of power that's released from them. Now, how big they were to begin with and how small they became after the fact, that we'll have to wait and see. 28, the brimstone would have had to generate, obviously, extremely high temperatures at a steady burn rate in order to get this type of effect. Just a fall and basically leaving things intact and just burning it in place. 29, according to the report, sulfur has been found at four sites, and geologists contacted say there are no other examples of similarly naturally occurring sulfur balls anywhere in the world. The only place that you can find this phenomenon, the place that the Bible describes the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, the place that you can't find any more hostile region to try to exist in than in this region of the world, as an example of God's overruling judgment for gross immorality of societies. 30, the best preserved site is just below Masada, south. 31, when a chunk of this ash is broken off and crushed, it disintegrates like talcum powder. So that's a description of what's been discovered over there. 32, how it all happened merits further study, but we are sure of the result. The remains of these ancient cities are exactly as the Bible states. He condemned the cities to destruction by reducing them to ashes. 33, at the time of their destruction, these cities, towns, were located in one of the most fertile and prosperous river valleys on earth. Again, Genesis 13:10, as we read in regards to why Lot went in this direction. 34, life was easy. The prosperity level of the average person was obviously high. 35, these cities of the plain had experienced a close call when they were invaded and plundered of wealth and people by a coalition from the east. That's part of the verses that we read there, Genesis 14, in regards to the kings coming from the east in that respect, making war with the kings of these cities, this valley. And verse 4, continue there in Genesis 14. 12 years they had served Chedorlaomer, but the 13th year they rebelled. And it seems by all appearances they were required to pay tribute in this regards. And they started withholding their money. And he got up his allies and he went in and ransacked them. And in the 14th year, Chedorlaomer and the kings that were with him came and defeated the Raphaim in Ashtaroth, Karnine, and the Zumzin in Ham, and the Emmon in Sheba, Kerathon, and the Horites in their Mount Seir, as far as El Paran, which is by the wilderness. Then they turned back, came to Emeshpat, that is Kadesh, encountered all the country, the Amalekites, and also the Amorites who lived in Hazazon, Tamar. The king of Sodom, the king of Gomorrah, and the king of Admon, the king of Zebulun, and the king of Bela, that is Zoar, came out, and they arrayed for battle against him in the valley of Siddim. Against Chedorlaomer, king of Elam, Tidal, king of Goan, Amphrael, king of Shinar, Arioch, king of Elasar, four kings against five. Now the valley of Siddim was full of tar pits, and kings of Sodom and Gomorrah fled, and they fell unto them. But those who survived fled to the hill country. And did they, the conquering kings, took all the goods of Sodom and Gomorrah and all their food supply and departed. So they basically went and plundered the place. And they obviously took slaves, and Lot and his family was involved. They also took Lot, Abraham's nephew, and his possessions departed, for he was living in Sodom. So he had, at first went to the valley, but then he had relocated to Sodom because of its affluency. He's going to make his money there. Then a fugitive came and told Abraham the Hebrew. Now he's living by the oaks of Mamre, the Amorite, brother of Eshcol, and brother of Aner, and these were allies with Abram. And when Abram heard that his relative had been taken captive, he led out his trained men, born in his house, 318, and went in pursuit as far as Dan. And he divided his forces against him by night, he and his servants, and defeated them, and pursued them as far as Hobah, which is north of Damascus. So Abraham was not anybody you want to mess with either. And he brought back all the goods, and also brought back his relative Lot, with his possessions, and also the women and the people. So he rescued all those who were enslaved, including his nephew Lot, in that respect. So, before their destruction, we're bringing this out, before their destruction, these kings, God permitted these kings to come in and basically plunder their cities and take captive Lot and then, etc., before the fact. So, 36, as I brought out, apparently they had reneged on the tribute they were paying to King Chedorlaomer and allies. And he came in and, by force, became the IRS of the region. That time of the year, I figure I'd throw that in. Genesis 14:4. 37, as we saw and as we read, Abraham conducted a nighttime raid that freed the people, including his nephew Lot. In Genesis 14:13-16. 38, this event was warning discipline to the people of these cities. It was warning discipline from God in regards to their evil. And their cities were known for evil. If you don't pull your horns in, so to speak, you know, worse can happen. 39, but they did not take it to heart and continued to practice unrestrained homosexuality on a scale unheard of in the region. Essentially, unbridled. Can't walk down the street without gay bars probably all over the place. Genesis 13:13. Now the men of Sodom were wicked exceedingly. and sinners against the Lord. That's the men of Sodom. It doesn't say anything about the women. It says the men of Sodom. Just thought I'd throw that in there. Verse 18:20. And the Lord said, the outcry of Sodom and Gomorrah is indeed great, and their sin is exceedingly grave. And then 19:1-11, we have the account of the two angels after visiting with Abraham, agreeing to go in and rescue his nephew Lot before the destruction of what occurred to these male angels as they went in to Sodom. And we'll just read the account here, get it in our frame of reference as we continue to go through this. Now the two angels, the ones that have been with Yahweh and Abraham had applied hospitality to, came to Sodom in the evening as Lot was sitting in the gate of Sodom. When Lot saw them, he rose to meet them and bowed down with his face to the ground. And he said, now behold, my lords, please turn aside into your servant's house and spend the night and wash your feet. Willing to apply hospitality. It may seem as maybe a potential additional income, somebody you can do business with coming into the city. And wash your feet, then you may rise early and go on your way. They said, however, no, but we shall spend the night in the square. And they refused his hospitality. He said, well, we're just going to hang out here. And this is where it's then revealed in regards to what kind of environment the city of Sodom was, existed in. Yet he urged them strongly, so they turned aside to him and entered his house. And he prepared a feast for them and baked unleavened bread, and they ate. Before they lay down, the men of the city, the men of Sodom, surrounded the house, both young and old, all the people from every quarter. Man, they occupied the entirety of this town, basically, by all appearances. They were in every aspect of it. You didn't have a gay street here and a hetero street over here. They infiltrated this place, these cities. And they called the Lot and said to him, where are the men who came to you tonight? Bring them out to us that we may have relations with them. That's homosexual relations. What other kind of relation? Why, hold hands? Do business? Don't be stupid. They're talking about having homosexual relations. And that's a problem with homosexuals. Their STA, once they let go of that vice, get into it, often is insatiable. They can't be satisfied, and they'll do what they have to do try to please the flesh. And but Lot went out to them at the doorway and shut the door behind him and said, please, my brothers, do not act wickedly. Now behold, I have two daughters. Yea, for Lot, in his application. I have two daughters who have not had relations with man. They're virgins. And they're actually engaged at this point in time. Please let me bring them out to you and do to them whatever you like. Only do nothing to these men as much as they have come under the shelter of my roof. Now don't think that he's just protecting these guys because they're angels. No, these are business. Lot is a monetary reversionist. This is his potential income. New potential income, these men. And he's trying to show them grace and get them on his side so he can do business with them and make a financial gain. That's really the purpose behind all this. And he's willing to throw in his two daughters and have some normal sex for once in your life. And you can do it with them. But they said, stand aside. Furthermore, they said, this one came in as an alien. Already is acting like a judge. That's the response to Lot. Who's this legalistic prick? Essentially. Judging us. And trying to act like he has some type of authority around here. And to leave these men alone. I mean, this is essentially where they're coming from. The Bible can't be much more blunt than what it is in regards to his language. I try to help it. But now we will treat you worse than them. All right, you don't want to give us our way? I won't say it. But look out. Yeah, you're next. See. So they pressed hard against Lot and came near to break the door. Nothing but a bunch of animals. And they struck them and shut. But the men, verse 10, because he applied hospitality and extended his welcome to them, these angels protected him. But the men reached out their hands and brought Lot into the house with them and shut the door. And they struck the men who were at the doorway of the house with blindness, both small and great, so that they wearied themselves trying to find the doorway. The insatiability of the abnormal perversion of the phallic trend of homosexuality. And then he discusses with them to get things together. They're getting ready to destroy God, getting ready to destroy the cities. So, even after the fact, after everybody gets back put back into their towns, Lot went back to Sodom after Abraham rescued him. And we see, obviously, some time had to occur since the initial raid occurred as warning discipline. And nobody took it to heart. And you see the rampant nature of the city, the STAs of these cities in full swing at this point in time again in history. So 40, for the evidence that this civilization was destroyed specifically for the practice of this abnormal sexual perversion. Again, we refer you to the passage we just read. It doesn't get any more obvious than that. And then we can compare that to Jude 1:7. That reads, just as Sodom and Gomorrah and the cities around them, in regards to these fallen angels who came in, these aliens who came in and had abnormal sexual practice in regards to human females. Angels and humans are not designed to mix in regards to the genetic code, etc. And he compares them in regards to Sodom and Gomorrah, in regards to their immorality, since they are in the same way, continuing with the verse, since they in the same way as these indulged in gross immorality, completely and totally abhorring the nature of God's plan and God's divine design, and for these celibate demons not to leave their domain in this respect, etc., and went after strange flesh. See, strange flesh. That's why homosexuals are after a strange flesh. Flesh of their own make are exhibited as an example and undergoing the punishment of eternal fire. So the comparison, the fallen demons and their alien activity of sexual activity is likened to the homosexual race of gross immorality as is described, and going after strange flesh, that which is abnormal. All sexual deviance is perversion. It's a perversion of the sexual code that God has established for men. All sex is to be held within the divine institution of marriage, that and that institution alone. Any sex outside of that is sexual perversions. And you have normal perversion, you have abnormal perversion. Normal perversion is the perversions of sexual activity between men and women. Abnormal is between the same sexes. Again, as I've stated many times, I'm not even old that old that I don't remember abnormal psychology in college. But obviously a lot of that mindset has changed in the last couple of decades in regards to this society. Homosexuality is accepted almost in every aspect of our society anymore. School systems, the government, the military, how much worse is it going to get? You say the word fag, and you know they hear about it, and certain people, and they'll drag your name out and drag you through mud if you're in the public spotlight. Send them my tape. I don't care. 41. Fag used to be what you threw on the fire, but actually what it is what God throws on the fire. But anyway, 41. If you're old enough to remember that, would used to be referred to as fag or faggots. And then it's applied to the homosexual race, the parallel. 41, it can't go unnoticed, the irony of this event. I'll bring this out. To me, this is, it just blows my mind, so to speak. It can't go unnoticed, the irony of this event, with that of the fallen angels, verse 4. As the two male targets were elect angels. You have angels in both situations. You have the fallen angels in the first one, in the demonic infiltration of the human race. Now, in this gross, immoral thing, you have two angels that are targets. But these are elect angels. Wrong thing. 42, it appears that even the demons had the common sense to stick to normal perversion, albeit still strange flesh. Even the demons, you don't see them engaging in homosexual activity. When they do let loose, at least they know to grab a woman. See? That's the natural aspect of God's creation. And it's obvious, even to the demons, what they must think about the homosexual population and males. And it just shows you the deviance of the human STA. How deviant it can truly become. 43, Peter's description of the judgment that dramatically and suddenly slammed that society into a brick wall is described with the participial phrase, by reducing them to ashes. Tepharo is the term, the verb. 44, this hawpox is used by the Dio Cassius of 66, of the destruction of Pompeii and Herculaneum in 79 AD by the eruption of Mount Vesuvius. Ballinger brought that out in his analysis, 2 Peter. 45, the main verb in the Greek, which is condemned here, katakrino, is found in some manuscripts with the noun destruction, as we have in our verse, katastrophe, though the noun is omitted in some important witnesses, as I brought out, prior to the second text, B.C., and 1730 manuscripts. 46, here it has a meaning to make extinct. 47, a more direct translation could be, in reducing the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah to ashes, he condemned them to extinction. 48, this total destruction was brought on by God in order to impress on succeeding generations that the vice of homosexuality will be punished, ultimately. 49, this vice sexually represents an extreme of open rebellion against the very nature of God's plan for His creation. And that it is abnormal with respect to that which is natural. It is brought out in regards to this vice in Romans 1, verses 26 through 27, another verse that clearly refers to homosexual behavior. And here that it is abnormal. It is an abnormal approach to life. For this reason, God gave them over to literally dishonorable passions. For even their females exchanged the natural function for that which is literally against nature. That's lesbianism. And in the same way also, the males abandoned their natural function of the female and burned in their desire toward one another, homosexuality. Males with males committing literally the shameful act and receiving in their own persons the due penalty of their error. So the homosexual vice is, if you will, an extreme of open rebellion in regards to God Himself and the very expression of God in His creation. It goes against nature completely and totally. Metaphorically speaking, in regards to the homosexual vice being open rebellion against the very nature of God's plan for His creation, 50, metaphorically speaking, just as the Gnostics have rebelled against the very nature of Christ and plan and person for salvation. They deny the Master. They completely rebel against the very nature of the person of Christ and the plan for salvation. They diminutize or disregard His deity or His humanity or both in this respect and what is necessary for God to provide salvation for mankind. They corrupt and erode it to such a degree that people can't even come to salvation phase one under their type of ministry of these unbeliever types of the worst of the worst. That's what Peter zeroes in on. Figures you can figure it out from then on out. So you have a, if you will, a metaphorical parallel that we can draw from this. And that's these false teachers rebelling against the very nature of Christ in plan and person for salvation. 51, these have opted to exchange the truth of God for a lie, which is the very approach of negative volition, the Romans passage in Romans 1:25, for they exchange the truth of God for a lie and worship and serve the creature rather than the Creator. So they have often exchanged the truth of God for a lie in such a way they represent an abnormal perversion to Christianity as homosexuals to nature. To say you're a Christian and destroy the integrity of the nature and the person of Jesus Christ in your stand, how abnormal is that? To attack the very thing of which the whole concept of Christianity revolves around. And say, no, he's not really God the flesh. His work on the cross didn't do anything in regards to dealing with the sin problem in regards to this world. And it's just as abnormal as the queers themselves. That's the truth. And that's what Peter is coming out and saying in a very polite way. Peter is calling these people spiritual homosexuals. I had fun going through this. When this guy started dawning me, I said, yeah, this is exactly what they are. They pervert the person of Jesus Christ to this degree. They're no better than in the human race in gross spiritual immorality as homosexuals are in regards to immorality on their part. 52, it is a strange STA that adheres to the Christian religion, yet denies its very master and reason for being. Where are these people coming from? As we would ask ourselves regards to homosexuals, maybe the MPL, where are they coming from? Man, good grief, how could you do that? Well, the same it is in regards to Peter's looking at these false teachers. How in the world can they do this? You know, that idea. 53, those false teachers that corrupt the gospel phase 1 to such extent that it promotes unbelief, fail to provide that necessary for the, quote, new birth, end quote, and engage in activities spiritually equivalent to homosexual behavior. They're not going to produce nothing. No any more than you're going to have kids with homosexual relationships, apart from modern science and adoption or whatever. Let's see. Now, I cut you some slack. I had a lot of other things I want to put in here, but I said, better put it in. 54, their gospel is, quote, alien, end quote, like the fallen angels, alien flesh, and abnormal, quote, end quote. Just like the homosexuals. Their gospel is that way. It's presented that way. It's out of this world. It doesn't belong. Completely, totally against nature itself. The very nature of God's plan. 55, in the extreme, whole societies are subject to annihilation for this sexual vice. 56, false teaching and resulting corrupt behavior, being in Lot's day or Peter's day, such as in Pompeii, or in our modern age, will not be tolerated beyond a point. 57, as societies fail to curtail this activity among them, eventually God will otherwise. They had convinced themselves that they had outgrown the old-fashioned morality, but in so doing, they made a fatal mistake. Do we see history repeating itself today in our society and elsewhere in this world? Yes, we do. It's so obvious, it's not even funny. See, it has been accepted as an alternative lifestyle across the board almost, even within Christian circles. Our nation, who, quote, stands for God, end quote, allowing this vice, of which you have an eternal, if you will, through history, example of what happened and how God thinks about this to exist and permeate our society in this regard, to allow this to go on. Just one thing that our country is guilty of. Throw that in with the mix of Babylon and the last days, and you see why, just like Sodom and Gomorrah, kapoof. And we're in the minority. As time goes on, we'll be in the more minority in regards to our stand with respect to morality at this level. And it's just like today, oh, that's just, you know, the old Spartan way, the old schoolers. You just got to think, you know, the new man, you're idiots. Some things just don't change. And God's attitude with respect to this vice does not change. and homosexuals emulate the fallen demons to that degree. See, they had no real concern in regards to God's plan for mankind and the purpose of the female race being on this planet, producing the seed of mankind, the Savior for mankind. 59, the ecology of the Dead Sea region remains a constant reminder of what God thinks about this vice. 60, the Dead Sea being the lowest point on the earth, 420 meters below sea level. Some 1,200, figure it out yourself, about 3 feet per meter, a little bit more. And a place of death, absent of the life forms, salt, ash, sulfur, and heat constitute an example to those who would live ungodly thereafter. Mankind has it there as a permanent example. That because people reject the truth of Bible doctrine, what Scripture records, etc., you know, it falls on deaf ears. It's seen by blind eyes. 61, it sets upon the region sets upon a Teutonic fault line, and the movement of these plates causes it to sink about 1 meter per year. God would like continued judgment on it. See, lower and lower to hell. 62, virtually nothing grows there. 63, the shore of the Dead Sea is utterly desolate. 64, no fish can live in its waters as the salt content is 33.7%. 65, the ancient Greeks reported poisonous gases rising from its surface. 66, until recently, the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah and 3 sister cities were known only from the biblical record. Hence, critics labeled the story a legend. 67, things changed in 1975 when archaeologists excavating an ancient royal palace in Ebla, also known as Elba, Syria, uncovered some 1,700 tablets. You can find this on our search for Sodom and Gomorrah by Simon Brown. 68, one of the tablets names the same 5 cities in an identical order to that given in Genesis 14:8, this palace found in Syria. 69, furthermore, the king's named match those stated in the Bible. 70, for example, a tablet states that the king of Gomorrah at the same time was a man named Bersha, the exact name recorded in Genesis 14:2. So we got that evidence that was brought out in 1975. 71, the biblical evidence, book of Genesis, and the physical evidence match so that men are without excuse in these last days. 72, yet this archaeological discovery is downplayed today as nothing but hype and unsubstantiated. And you look at a modern encyclopedia like Wikipedia, liberal in regards to his approach, and it will definitely bring out for you that modern archaeologists look at this discovery and say, oh, they're just blowing this out of proportion. It's not really that. But that's the way it is. That's the way modern science, mainline science, and the world is. They don't want to hear the truth. And they'll do everything they can to discredit it. Those who teach the truth and those who stand for the truth, they'll do what they can to discredit you and me and others. Throughout history, that's the way it's always been. It's the way it always will be. 73, the U.S. will be destroyed in a fire cataclysm that is comparable to that of Sodom and Gomorrah. Exact reference to Babylon in the last days is likened to the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. Isaiah 13:19. In Babylon, the beauty of kingdoms of the glory of the Chaldeans' pride will be as when God overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah. That's not a historical Babylon, as most Christians say it is of Revelation. That's prophetic. That's our country we're talking about there. Our country who works for the UN. The world, New World Order, the great merchants of this world are tied in. The corruption in regards to our government is despicable. Jeremiah 50, verse 40. As when God overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah with his neighbors, declared the Lord, no man will live there. In regards to Babylon, that is the prophetic Babylon. That's Jeremiah chapter 50. That's the subject. Nor will any man, son of man, reside in it. Just like Sodom and Gomorrah, no place to live. And no man will ever will live in this region of the world anymore. 74, we as a civilization with all our advanced research tools have turned away from the evidence and will suffer an equally dramatic end. 75, the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah remains an example. This is our term, hopodigma, prototype, a copy to all succeeding generations. 76, America is more culpable than others as we are a Christian civilization that has been granted much life. Culpability factor is also thrown in regards to our country. You can't even say that for Sodom and Gomorrah. And Jesus taught that in regards to the cities around him, in regards to his miracles. And Sodom and Gomorrah would be better off. They would have stopped their homosexual activity if they saw these kind of miracles, and God said, quit that. But the Jews, you know, and their negative volition and their culpability in regards to God's plan, still rejected it. And he said, you're worse off than Sodom and Gomorrah. Well, you can apply that directly to our nation. 77, God cannot and will not tolerate the particular vice that brought fire and brimstone upon the cities that practice abnormal perversion of homosexuality. Father, again, we thank you for the truth of your word. We ask God, the Holy Spirit, continue to lighten us these things in Jesus' name. Amen.